It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and today I'm joined by three guests in the studio, Neil Schiff and Carol Chudy from the Society of FBI Alumni, and Brad Benson from the Society of Former Special Agents of the FBI. We'll be discussing the Society's latest events and issues they're working on and a little bit of the background from the FBI of our guests here. And before we begin, just a quick reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And if you would like to join our discussion today and speak directly to our guests, call our toll-free number at 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And with that opening, welcome to all three of you. And we'd just like to get started by telling our audience a little bit about each of you. And Neil, why don't you go first and give us just a little background on that you were with the FBI and who you're with now?
Well, if I tell you, I have to shoot you. So, Jenny, I don't know if you want me to answer that question, but
I've got witnesses.
That's right, you do. And thank you very much for having us. Pardon my rough voice, just getting over a virus, but we'll do the best we can here. I've got some cough drops and water and some coffee here.
I think that's about everybody in this area right now.
But I worked at the FBI for a total of 27 years and had some Air Force, too, 4 years. So it's 31 years in government. I had a radio career first and then worked in the FBI's Office of Public Affairs and actually produced an ABC News Radio public affairs program called FBI This Week and another show called Gotcha, which aired and maybe still airs right here on Federal News Radio by my successor. But anyway, I did that and other things with the Office of Public Affairs, including introducing the Beach Boys in concert at FBI headquarters in June of 1988.
I remember
that. Well, there
that.
You go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Something a little different, and this is a little bit of a homecoming for you then, being back on the air. And I know we've had you on Fed Talk several times in your previous career.
Yes, here, and so. I did appear with Deborah Roth. Mm-hmm. And tell Deborah we have an absentee slip for her to fill out for not being here today, but you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And I, of course, brought guests up for you folks to interview as part of my job in public affairs. That's what we do, promote the FBI. And now we're actually promoting retired FBI societies, and you'll hear a lot more from Carol and Brad on that.
All right.
But we appreciate your having us here today.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. And Carol, Brad, I'll have each of you tell me just a little bit about your career with the FBI, what you did for the FBI, just briefly, and who you're with today.
Well, today I'm fully retired, but I spent 37 and a half years at the FBI. I started out as a typist and ended up a program manager at the very end, but most of my career was spent as a secretary or an administrative assistant to... I worked for half a dozen assistant directors.
Okay, so you had a pretty broad span of seeing what was going on at the agency, which definitely a good perspective on the issues.
I started out in personnel and ended up, I did substitute in Mr. Hoover's office for a while, and I worked in Mr. Tolson's office for a period of time.
The makings of a book right here.
I don't think so.
Oh, don't get us started.
Yeah, that's right. So, and who are you with today? You're with... Society.
Well, I'm fully retired now. I'm president of the Alumni Society right now. Right. I had worked for a retired agent with a major labor union for 16 years. He was the inspector general. And we both retired a year ago, and I'm thoroughly enjoying not working.
That's what I hear from folks. So, although, and tell me a little bit briefly about what the Society does. who you represent?
Well, the society was formed in 1973 by a group of women who had retired from the FBI, had lived their whole career in Washington, and wanted to stay in touch with one another. And that's how the society was originally formatted. It was the Society of Former FBI Women.
Okay.
And then they discovered, well, there are other ex-FBI employees who were not agents, who were men. And the ex-agents wouldn't let women in, so we let men in. We even let agents join.
So right, opened it up you. To everybody. Right. I think we have a couple members here. So
yeah, I'm a spy.
You just infiltrated the association.
Right.
So
Right. Good.
Well, and then we also have, I know you have some ties with the organization that Brad is with as well. And are they two separate organizations tied together? It looked like there were some ties to them.
They're separate, but we have our conventions together.
Okay.
And sometime on special projects, we both work on the
same issues. So, well, Brad, why don't you tell us a little bit about your career and who you're here with today?
Thank you, Jenny. My career is very much like Neil's. I came out of the military, out of the Army, and went to law school. And then following law school, came into the FBI in 1970. Served in Boston as my first office, and then went out to Cincinnati for 7 years. And then when the Freedom of Information and Privacy Acts cranked up and liberalized the information that needed to be disclosed, they took as many lawyers as they could find out of the field and brought us back here to headquarters to process all of the requests that were coming in at that time. I stayed around the headquarters for the next 13 years and until 1992, went back up to Boston, served 3 years there handling the civil rights desk and domestic terrorism. And then in 1995, came back to headquarters, spent my last 3 years here, and retired in 1998. Following the Bureau, I worked with Sean McQueenie, another retired agent, with his small investigative firm called Corporate Risk International. I did that for 11 or so years, and then became the joined the Society of the Former Special Agents in 1998 when I left the Bureau, and then last in 2010 became the president-elect of the Society, and currently am the chair of the Foundation of Former Special Agents. And we do work very closely with Carol and Neil, with the Alumni Society in serving the entire FBI and law enforcement family.
And how many members do each of your organizations have, roughly? And who exactly, is it just special agents that are in your association?
For the Society of Former Special Agents, it is just former special agents that retired in good standing. We have approximately 8,000 in
there. Okay. And Carol?
We have approximately just under 1,300 members right now.
So quite a few active folks in this area.
Yeah.
So who want to stay connected and stay...
The Metro that Neil's with has probably one of our largest, is one of our largest chapters.
The 1,300 Carol references, they're around the country.
They are around the country.
Of members of the Society of FBI Alumni. Then there are chapters that developed some years after the creation by the women back in 1973. And there's a Metro chapter that covers basically Maryland and the district, but anybody else can join, you know, from the alumni organization. I happen to be the chairman of the Metro chapter, and there is a Northern Virginia chapter. And those are people mostly who live in the Virginia area that, you know, wanted to have their own chapter, and they had actually previously been, most of them, in the Metro.
And are some of these the largest chapters, or do you find there are quite a few federal former FBI agents around the country who are still staying connected?
Well, there's many chapters around the country. Carol could probably tell you how many.
Yeah, we have 25 chapters.
All right, around the country. Quite a good presence.
And Chicago is almost at 100 members now. They're trying very hard to get their 100th member. Northern Virginia.
We're over 100.
Just a little competition.
Northern Virginia is, we keep trying to get to 50.
All right. So, hey, there's, you know, little steps everywhere, but that's good. And I'm going to stop us right here and take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll be talking a little bit about some of the activities that both of your societies have been involved in and some of the activities that the foundation has been involved in as well. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and today I'm joined by Brad Benson from the Society of Former Special Agents of the FBI, Carol Chudy and Neil Schiff from the Society of FBI Alumni. And we're discussing what the societies are currently engaging in, what activities. And if you have any questions or comments, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we left, we had just been talking a little bit about who the societies have as their members, who they represent. And I understand that the Society of Former Special Agents, I've kind of got a mouthful there. So I'm used to the acronyms of DC here. We've got to come up with something catchy. But that you have both activities from the society and a foundation that you're working on with two separate missions, I would imagine.
Yes.
And can you talk about the mission of the foundation and what it engages in?
I will. The foundation is a C3 organization under the tax code, whereas the society itself is a social organization. The charitable entity collects and invests donations by members and others of the society in order to fund scholarships for our children and our grandchildren. And as well as police officer children around the country, and particularly National Academy associates. We also provide humanitarian relief to victims experiencing hardship due to catastrophic injury or damage, such as we've had in the Northeast in recent weeks. Our trustee up there is Hilda Kogut, and she has done a wonderful job of identifying victims in our FBI family, that both special agents as well as professional support people.
And are these
in need. Yeah.
So the victims you're talking about are current FBI,
current
retired, or anybody in their near close family?
Current and retired, and people in the close family that have suffered under the impact of the storms.
Right, and unfortunately, we've had quite a few folks in the federal community who have been impacted greatly by those. And is it financial assistance, grants, loans? How are you?
Well, we are trying to supplement whatever FEMA and the American Red Cross and other relief agencies are either not able to do or unwilling to do. For example, the Carol's organization donated $10,000 to us so that we could provide through Target stores gift cards to people in these areas, in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut areas that are in need of assistance right now. And that's been a very welcome form of relief, and it's been distributed by the Employee Assistance Program in each of those offices, the New York, and New Haven offices.
That's great. And while we're talking about this, for any of our listeners out there, is there information on the website about where they can learn more about the foundation or how they can reach out to the foundation? Or is that something that folks go through their employee assistance program for?
The victims in those areas should go through the employee assistance program. We're working through the Bureau in order to provide this assistance, but retirees can certainly come on the website of the Society, and you're going to ask me what that is right now, and I'm stuck for it, but the Society website will also give some instructions on how to seek relief.
So, and I think Neil, did you know what the website was?
Or well, I sent it to you, but I didn't memorize it. Sorry.
That's okay. We'll put you guys on the spot.
I believe it's www.socxfbi.
I believe you're correct. Yeah. So, but I know folks can find it easy by just putting in the former agents of the FBI Foundation.
That'll
or
work.
Society of Former Special Agents. So good work. And now, have there been any high-profile assistance that you've done for folks? I believe you did provide some financial assistance to a family special agent who was held captive.
Bob Levinson was taken captive, I think, on the island of Kish off of Iran over 5 years ago. As a matter of fact, on the five-year anniversary earlier this year, the FBI itself offered a $1 million reward for information leading to Bob's return. The foundation and the society worked together to provide $10,000 to the Levinson family, particularly to the two youngest children of the Levinson family, not by way of charity, but by way of doing what Bob would have done had he been here. So again, it's all part of this family concept of the FBI to care for our own.
And were there other activities you did besides money? I think you also, besides the financial assistance, I think you also worked with Congress or reached out to the media to try to build some awareness around this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We stood shoulder to shoulder with police officers, members of Carroll's Society, of the Alumni Association, the National Academy Associates, the on board members of the FBI, right there on the steps of the Washington field office, as the director and Mr. McJunkin, I think, at the Washington field office announced the $1 million reward. It was a great show of unity for Bob Levinson and his family.
Right, and I'm sure that was helpful for them to see, but also to bring awareness to this cause. What is the status of Mr. Levinson right now? Is he still...
Regrettably, he is still being held captive, but the negotiations, I'm sure, are ongoing. They're very sensitive, as you might imagine.
And I'm imagining this is something that you'll be continuing to watch and support the family and
We continue
and
to put, keep awareness and pressure on to that this investigation not lapse.
Absolutely. So that sounds like a very worthwhile time and investment.
It is.
So, and then what other, the foundation does the financial side, but the society itself has some activities that I believe you've been active in. And we talked about the foundation going up to Capitol Hill, but do you have initiatives that
Well, that's
the
right,
society
too.
Is
we
following?
We do some, for lack of a better word, light lobbying in this regard, particularly with regard to the cybersecurity issue. And that's been one that the director has announced as one of the most critical needs and highest priorities of the FBI right now, to make sure that our critical infrastructure is not compromised by either state-sponsored hackers, terrorists, or our homegrown variety. It is it's a very high priority with the FBI right now, and we have tried to go up on the Hill and offer whatever assistance we could to the legislative people in drafting legislation that would assist all law enforcement in protecting this vital resource.
Well, and that's certainly something that's gotten quite a bit of media play is the threats, as this is, you know, in the 21st century, one of the things we're looking at. And I guess as you look at how the world has changed, and I imagine you all have seen that in the course of your careers, things that, you know, one of the things I loved, Brad, about your bio was you mentioned fraud with 8-track tapes. You know, I mean, that's,
8-track
that's
tapes?
I know, right? That's the going back, you know, quite a ways, and I have young kids who I know will never you know, not know about that. But it's different because now the first line of, I think, issues that folks are looking at and worried about is this cybersecurity. And that's really become kind of ground zero on looking forward and how we protect the country. Yes. So
you need to go to the Smithsonian for HRACs now.
Yeah. So, I still have some.
I have some, too.
Yes, and a machine that would play them. And I have one.
You know, I'd be willing to bet. I'd be willing to bet there are a lot of folks out there who still do. But it's certainly a different changing world in the nature of the threats that
we were talking about helping people certainly in need. And if I could just plant a seed, and I'm going to let Carol and Brad expand upon it, but at your annual convention, and then it's really a combined thing, you work with the wounded warriors and have them in attendance. And I believe there's some activities with that and fundraising and things like that. Maybe you can expand upon it just a little bit, because that's a very important thing, too, to help those who are serving our country.
Well, different ones of our chapters at the convention in California sponsored one or more wounded warriors for the activities at the convention, the dinner and the dancing on Saturday night. I don't remember how many exactly we sponsored.
Carol, I think we had 50, and your organization was very generous in sponsoring these very grateful primarily Marines, as you might imagine, right there at Camp Pendleton in San Diego. But they were very appreciative of...
I know they were trying to get sponsors for 50 members, but that included the spouses that accompanied the veterans.
So you've been doing some work that's broader family, I guess, you know, law enforcement and then the military side as well, looking at helping all of those folks.
Oh, exactly. And Jenny, there's one of the former presidents of our organization, John Kelso, has championed the cause of children that are either lost or abducted. And we have a national child identification program that we use in conjunction with the National Football League, whereby we'll take kits that include a swab to take DNA, fingerprints. And these are, and photographs, these are things that parents will have on hand should that terribly unfortunate day when a child is missing occur. And that then is given to police departments, and that gives them a great head start on the investigation to try to locate and return that child.
And is this an initiative sponsored by the Society, or is it one that was sponsored by the FBI and you took on and worked with, reached out to the NFL?
No, this is an initiative of the Society itself for the last 5 or 6 years. And again, it's been championed and maintained by John Kelso during that time. And it's one very popular with our chapters. We have, incidentally, we're a little different than Carol Society. We have 129 chapters divided into 8 regions of the United States. Again, we're a larger organization.
And so you do have that reach out to do something like this. And partnering with the NFL, we don't see that all the time, but that's a great way to get out to broader folks and really bring that mission out there. So
Kenny Hansmeyer with the NFL has been very, very helpful to us in this regard.
If I can add that the FBI itself works with, I believe it's the Football Coaches Association, I'm not sure the exact title, with colleges, maybe high schools, on these kits for having fingerprints stored in case there's like abductions or missing children or whatever situations develop. And they work in together, the field office, FBI agents, and professional support people will go to football games in the fall, all through the fall, all around the country, and have these kits available for the parents. Mm-hmm. It's really for the parents.
Absolutely.
To keep their kids safe. Listeners anywhere in the country who may be listening over the internet besides the Washington, D.C. area on 1500 AM, you can contact your local FBI office and inquire about that, because that is available as well besides the National Football League. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great way that you all have taken some of your experiences, both good and bad, because some of these really, some of the experiences aren't positive, and there are a lot of things that happen out there that are unfortunate and really give that back to the community, since you have seen that and seen the need for things. And on that note, I think we're going to take our middle of the show break. And when we return, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that you've seen, maybe some of the history of the FBI and your careers there. And we talked a little bit about the changing nature of how things are both in media and radio and also just on the ground. So we'll take a stop here and we'll be back shortly. And you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune in to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm here with Carol Chudy and Neil Schiff from the Society of FBI Alumni and Brad Benson from the Society of Former Special Agents of the FBI. If you'd like to be part of the discussion today, please give us a call at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we left, we had just finished up talking about some of the events that both of your organizations were working on, but wanted to shift tracks a little bit here because you've both, well, all three of you, I say both, but all three of you have had full careers at the FBI and have seen some of the changing nature of things. And Neil, I'll put you on the spot here a little bit because you worked in radio, and I wanted to go back because one of the things that people might not realize, but we used to do this on Fed Talk as well, is bring in to talk about some of the initiatives the FBI is working on. And I don't think people think FBI radio shows, you know,
well,
or FBI
true.
Outreach, you know, so a little bit of interest is that, you know, there is this need to bring out some of the issues. We talked about the kits, fingerprint kits for parents, some of these issues that need to get out there to the general public. And I think that's why these shows were so important.
The FBI and ABC Radio have had an agreement going on since 1965 on the current program that is produced, again, by my successor now, but I did for many, many years, 1,025 shows, by the way, but who's counting? it actually is an important, how shall I say, arm of the FBI, the Public Affairs Office. I had a unit chief who was a special agent, supervisory special agent, who always said, and this is very true, that if people out in the country aren't familiar with the FBI, when a Brad Benson comes by doing an investigation and rings the doorbell, shows his credentials, and says to the person at the door, "Can I talk to you about so and so? We're doing an investigation, whatever." They might say, "I don't even know who you are." No, no, no. But if you can get publicity, do public relations, public affairs, well, that actually puts the FBI in front of the people of the United States. And so here's a radio show. It years ago was 5 minutes long. We changed it to 1 minute, but it aired around the country on ABC affiliates. It's on the internet. It's been on the internet since 1996, I think. And it helps people learn what the FBI does, what its jurisdictions are. you know, what's the mission? There's many more missions now, certainly since 9/11, and things have changed, no doubt about it. But the PR angle, and I've always got my PR and radio cap on, it's important to let people know and educate people so that when Brad knocks on the door, rings the doorbell, oh, yeah, you know, I hear your show. Yeah, I'll talk to you. Come on in. Or read about you in the paper. You know, they do news releases and things like that. And it's important to get the word out. You know, just as you have a show here and the station promotes the show to get people to tune in, you know, 11 o'clock on a Friday to hear Jenny and Deborah and everybody else here on Fed Talk. So this promotion is important. And that was part of my job. The office I was in, we liaison with the authors, TV and movie producers and things like that. I just didn't hang around and just do radio shows. I created some other shows. I created podcasts and all that. But there were other things that we did besides just, you know, the radio thing. But yeah, the FBI, even though it's been an agency that people say, they're not going to say anything. They never talk. Well, it's all changed. The FBI does talk, and they have a story, many stories to tell.
Well, and sometimes I think you see that engaging people in initiatives might help. There's you know, the power of the crowd in some respects if you're trying to identify somebody. I know you brought on one time, I think, cold cases. You know, so there are a lot of areas where doing that sort of public-private partnership, if you want to call it even that, in communications, helps with the FBI's mission. But I think people, it always is interesting because I think people see the TV shows and think, oh, this is the one thing they're doing, and they don't talk about anything. There's nothing out there. It's all behind the scenes. But in fact, getting the word out is part of the mission. And I imagine with both of your societies, that's part of the mission as well, is to support both the FBI and probably the current and former folks who work there.
Yes. And Jenny, let me add to what Neil said. Having retired in 1998, it's been a long time since Brad knocked on a door. But getting the word out, I think, is important for people in the public to know. The FBI has undergone dramatic change since 9/11. And under Director Mueller, he had to reform the Bureau from one of being primarily a reactive agency investigating crime to one of a very proactive entity. And since then, we've had some sister organizations formed, one of them being the FBI Agents Association, and along with it, now more recently, the FBI Intelligence Analysts Association. I believe I have that term correct. But it also, it's an indication that the FBI has brought on a team of analysts that do a great deal of drudgery in analyzing every tip, every piece of information that comes in, and then funneling that out in to people that can act upon it. This is something that really came to light under Director Mueller, and I think this is something that needs to get out to people.
And that it really did, as you both mentioned, 9/11 really changed the nature of, I think, law enforcement in general, Homeland Security in general, and really where agencies had to focus and also communicate. You need some of those analysts to share intelligence with other agencies who are all working on comparable missions.
And, you know, that spreads because the public is even more alert now.
Right. Absolutely.
And watching. And, well, you see something unusual, call the police.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, and I think part of that is, as you said, some of it's media driven because people do see some of these TV shows. They have this, I guess, perception or respect or just familiarity with what agencies are doing now. I had a conversation with somebody the other day at work where we were trying to count the number of TV shows that have federal employees on them, FBI agents. You know, a lot of them are law enforcement related TV shows, but it's interesting because it really does breed this familiarity with the public and with what you all did and what your colleagues do now. Yeah. So I think that's interesting. And have you taken any stances on issues that are affecting current federal employees? I know you're, or current FBI agents, I know you focus, your members are retired, but in some ways that leads them to be a good support to those who are already there. And I don't know if you've done any, taken any stances. There's been a lot of issues affecting current federal employees.
Well, the society in particular, is involved in advocacy to keep a close watch over the earned benefits, particularly in this environment of cost cutting and fiscal cliffs. We want to make sure that we share the burden. We don't want to shirk any responsibilities, but our colleagues have worked very hard for what they've earned, and we feel as though we have an obligation to make that degree of advocacy on the Hill that we want to be treated fairly.
Right, and I think that's the message that's coming from a lot of different organizations as well. And some of the things that are being discussed actually affect retired folks who have worked for federal agencies, so oh, yeah. Among, you know, your members as well. So there's a lot going out there, and I think along with 9/11, some of the fiscal cliff, some of the talk about federal workforce has certainly changed as well, and I'm sure that's of interest to your members.
Yeah, and we our advocacy goes not just for the special agent population, but also for the professional staff that we worked with so closely over the years of our employment.
Right. I think that is a good point, is that a lot of this isn't done in a stovepipe. You know, Neil had a hand in it doing the public affairs side. You had a hand in it being in the office and out in the field. So it's definitely a whole family of that. One of the things I wanted to rewind a little bit, we mentioned some conventions that you all did. And is this, you do a joint convention annually? Why don't you tell us a little bit about the purpose of the conventions and who's involved and how they came about?
Well, the society had its own convention for a while, and it was an economic thing that they merged with the agents because they could do more together. The two societies could have a nicer convention. And we do, the society always holds a raffle, and everyone can buy tickets. And we use the funds that we generate for scholarships the last few years. We
Are they scholarships for children of
society members or? Society members' families.
Okay.
And it goes down to great nieces and nephews, and it goes down quite a ways. We have given out 10 or 12 sometimes in the last few years. Economy being the way it is, our investments haven't generated as much money, so of course we have to cut back on the number of scholarships, but we're trying to come up with ways to raise money for scholarships this year.
Which is a great cause, and especially, you know, again, supporting some of those younger folks who need the assistance. So,
well, cost of college is just going up and up and up, and we do what we can.
That's great. Support your members as well. So, and the convention merged with yours at the...
Well, we did. We worked with Carol for 30 years of our career. We figured we needed to enjoy our retirement with them, too.
That makes sense.
But it's been, they've augmented us in such a wonderful way. And most recently, again, to provide $10,000 from their funds so that we could then provide, through the assistance of Target, these gift cards that have gone to the victims of the storm.
Which is really a fantastic contribution.
Yeah.
So, and then do your members come to the convention? Do you bring in speakers? How does that work?
Oh, I have to tell you about this. This year marked the 40th anniversary of women as special agents in the FBI. And it also was our 75th anniversary of the founding of the society in 1937. But we had Justice Sandra Day O'Connor.
That's a great
as
speaker.
Our guest speaker at this convention that we just had in September in San Diego. And she was spellbinding. She was wonderful.
And she was.
And did she address some of the concerns a little bit? She probably has a unique perspective about that's a great idea of, you know, being a female special agent. I imagine 40 years ago was different and probably not as easy as today. That kind of surprised me of going, well, that's right.
If I may share an anecdote that Justice O'Connor shared with all of us, she graduated from Stanford number two in her class. Yeah. And number one in her class was Bill Rehnquist.
I did not know that. That's an interesting fact.
And then she went on to say that she floated her resumes out to numerous law firms in the California area. None would hire her.
Except as a secretary.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Can you type? She was asked. And so eventually she went to work, Carol, correct me if I'm wrong, but as a volunteer lawyer. And soon they discovered that there's an enormous intellect here. But the talk about the glass ceiling and the difficulty the women had in the legal profession not so long ago and where she has gone.
Right. And I imagine as well in the law enforcement profession in some respects of
bringing
them into a position that was on the front lines, carrying a firearm, going out into some of these situations. And so it's nice to bring in that your society was able to highlight some of those issues. And I imagine, that's a different issue. Now we've sort of moved from that. Are there other challenges in the, for agents that you've seen lately that are different than when you started? Or anything that's, sometimes the mentoring perspective or looking back. I know for Neil, I'm sure things have changed from, as you said, radio. Now it's podcasts, social media. How else do you get the message out in 2 seconds and finding that soundbite? But I think for a lot of folks, the nature of the job has changed. It's much more not just the analyst side, but some of the threats have changed as well, what they're looking at.
Well, years ago, it was agents and lawyers and accountants that the FBI was hiring, and that was true.
That's true.
But today, if you're a computer geek, the FBI would love to have you.
Oh, there is a
cyber
is a
crime
significant geek squad.
Cyber, and there is cyber crime is maybe the biggest problem out there because terrorists go online and create havoc.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's something that everybody's looking for. And I think it's businesses, agencies, you name it. It's the cyber crime.
So there's been a big change.
Yep. And we're going to take a stop here for a minute and take our final break of the show. And when we return, we'll continue talking a little bit about your time at the FBI and some of the things we're seeing now. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering the last segment of our show. If you have a question or comment for our guest, please call us on our toll-free number, 1-877-936-9333, or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we first stepped out from this, we were talking a little bit about some of the changing the glass ceiling we'd seen with women coming in as agents, but I think there have been some other changes as well. Neil mentioned that one of the criteria was accountants and lawyers. Was that what you said?
Years ago.
Years ago.
When I was a kid, that's all I heard. The FBI, accountants, lawyers, we want you, And I was just a kid. I wanted to be in radio. I didn't necessarily want to be a law enforcement officer. But certainly for those people who were, accountants or lawyers, there was a golden opportunity. But today it's all changed. They need geeks.
Well, of course, right. But of course, my question was coming from different perspective and thinking of things, post 9/11, why on earth did they want accountants and lawyers? It just is a different changing because it different nature of.
You're asking why.
Right. I am asking why. I think you kind of get once you start thinking about it, you get it. But give us a little perspective on the culture back then.
Well, traditionally, there was the banking industry was threatened by both robberies and bank fraud and embezzlement, and so you needed lawyers and you needed accountants and people with that experience to be able to comb through files and records in order to come up with that sort of investigative effort. Today's changes are so dramatic and so different that now you, as Neil mentioned, you need to geek up your investigative agency. You need people with forensic backgrounds, and you need people that are multilingual.
Which I get, but one of the things we talked about, the cyber threats, and so it makes sense to have the computers, but the things that you needed lawyers and accountants for haven't gone away. I know, Carol, you said that a lot of that is still out there.
Well, yeah, white collar crime has not gone away. It's still out there. The other thing that changed in the FBI for the support people is they no longer have stenographers because the agents do all their own typing. And so the number of secretaries and support staff has changed immeasurably too. It's a whole different ballgame from when I was working there.
And probably a different level of information that you're handling in some respects, because it's coming in quicker. There's, fewer folks that are handling some of that work.
And everything is done by email. And stored on computers. You don't have to make the 12 carbon copies of a letter anymore.
Thank goodness.
I know. I was going to say that's not a bad thing in some respects.
No, that was not bad. But it's so the role of the support, professional support people has changed dramatically also.
And probably going to continue to change as we see, both changes in budget, but also changes in technology and other things. It makes every job that each of you did quite different from what it was. And I think, too, you're going to see more new challenges, I guess, for the agents that we haven't seen. I don't know if folks talk a little bit about what you think predict is going to become the next big issue.
Well, and Jenny, I don't want to demean the role of the agent in that it's not changed in the sense that they're not still making arrests and they're not still having, unfortunately, FBI martyrs. We've lost agents in gun battles in the last several years. So that aspect is still going to be there. But the responsibilities have become so much more varied. The crimes that have to be investigated are so much more complex, and they go worldwide now. Whereas we were once pretty much limited at our shores, now we have legal attachés and investigative people going all over the world to investigate crimes against the United States and its citizens.
And I think that's one of the things that people do forget is you think FBI. The United States. We have other agencies that deal with issues abroad usually, but that's not the case anymore because we have so many unfortunate situations that do affect American citizens overseas. And I learned that the other day, that if it is an American citizen or on an embassy property or something that's considered, it would fall under the jurisdiction of the FBI.
Yeah. The FBI has, I believe, 62 legal attaché offices, and they're all outside the United States. Mm-hmm.
And that's
all around the world.
And that's another thing where, again, coming from my perspective, the PR part helps because you don't realize that those things are out there and that that's part of what FBI personnel are having to deal with these
days.
Well,
I really liked when the internet came about because now you can put the little radio shows that I did, on the internet so people around the world can hear them, and help actually, become familiar with the FBI as, we talked about earlier. So PR spreads through the internet, putting all the things up there that the FBI has at www.fbi.gov. People can feel free to go there and see all kinds of stuff. It's an education to its own.
Right. And that's something that, I think a lot of folks both know and also forget that it's so easy to access all of that information. And I imagine with your groups, I don't know if you still work with the FBI closely on more than just those few initiatives. Is it a broader range of, do you work with the local offices on more than just, say, the employee assistance program or those kits? Or
No, Jenny. Generally, we're not involved in investigations as such, but where we can augment the FBI in advocacy by way of the disaster relief and scholarships. We feel as though that's our role.
And in some ways, you guys are great also, you know, advocates for mm-hmm. both of the professions and that all of you were engaged in. And I think that's a nice thing to hear folks giving back about, you know, federal service that they did for so many years.
The society is celebrating its 40th anniversary of since it was established next May.
Congratulations. And, that's a good anniversary.
So we're going to have a celebrated in on the actual anniversary day, May the 18th, 2013.
Do you have any plans in the works for the
celebration?
Well,
we're working on it. It's going to be tie it in with our spring board meeting and at Jekyll Island, Georgia.
Okay, that's great.
Plans are still being developed, but we hope that as many society members as possible can make the trip down there. And we're going to try to keep the cost where it's affordable.
Right. That's always a concern in this day and age.
And of course, we want to encourage anybody that might be listening today, if they're former FBI employees, they only had to be a work for the Bureau for 1 year to qualify for joining our society. And they can go to our website to get an application, and we hope that they'll consider that. And our website is thefbialumni.com.
That's great, because it'd be nice to get out there and get the word, because I think the work you all of you do is worth getting more folks involved in. And that's actually a good question. Do the special agents have served for any number of years, or as long as they were employed, to become a member of your association?
The criteria is that they left in good standing.
But had to fully retire after a full career?
Not necessarily retire. Many have left the Bureau and gone to work with other agencies or gone to the law firms or gone other pursuits, and they're entitled to membership, again, as long as they've left in good standing.
All right. So then it's the former, isn't just just the retired aspect. And I guess we have just a few minutes of the show left here. I'm wondering if, Neil, if you have any last stories that you'd like to share with us, or nuggets of wisdom, one of your favorite times from PR, something that you've been dying to, besides the Beach Boys, which
June 8th, 1988, in the courtyard at FBI headquarters, the Beach Boys did appear, and I thankfully got to introduce them, and my first words were, "Attention FBI, are you ready to rock and roll?" Carol has a really interesting little story. Can I tell it?
Yeah.
I'd like you to tell it, actually. When the sad thing was that President John Kennedy was assassinated in November of 1963, but Carol was working in one of the main offices dealing with incoming letters. Say what happened.
Well, I was substituting in Mr. Hoover's office at that time, and basically was to open the mail and sort it into good and bad. But it was amazing how many people blamed the FBI for not protecting John Kennedy.
Absolutely.
That we should have saved him.
It's a Secret Service mission. And people don't always understand.
And it's still the Secret Service mission, not FBI, and people think it's the FBI. Yeah. And they do a great job, too. Nobody's trying to degrade Secret Service here
Absolutely
at all. It's just
not.
That the public wrote in and, you know, was in error. And I just find it interesting that those kinds of letters came in.
It does. And people are very involved in these issues. And that's all the time we have today. I thank all of you for being on the show with us. It was very interesting.
Thank you.
And so we are closing out now. And thank you for joining us. Fed Talk's brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And have a great weekend.